Welcome back to the Brothers in Christ podcast. Today we will be jumping into and exploring Judges 4. And without further ado, let's hit it. Judges 4, verse 1. The Israelites again did what was evil in the sight of the Lord after Ehud had died. So the Lord sold them to King Jabin of Canaan, who reigned in Hazor. The commander of his army was Sisera, who lived in Harosheth of the nations. Then the Israelites called out to the Lord because Jabin had 900 iron chariots, and he harshly oppressed them 20 years. Deborah, a prophetess and the wife of Lappidoth, was judging Israel at that time. She would sit under the palm tree of Deborah between Ramah and Bethel in the hill country of Ephraim, and the Israelites went up to her to settle disputes. She summoned Barak, son of Abinoam, from Kadesh in Naphtali, and said to him, "Hasn't the Lord, the God of Israel, commanded you? Go, deploy the troops on Mount Tabor, and take with you 10,000 men from the Naphtalites and Zebulunites. Then I will lure Sisera, commander of Jabin's army, his chariots, and his infantry at the Wadi Kishon to fight against you, and I will hand him over to you." Barak said to her, "If you will go with me, I will go. But if you will not go with me, I will not go." "I will gladly go with you," she said, "but you will receive no honor on the road you are about to take, because the Lord will sell Sisera to a woman." So Deborah got up and went with Barak to Kadesh. Barak summoned Zebulun and Naphtali to Kadesh. 10,000 men followed him, and Deborah also went with him. Now Heber the Kenite had moved away from the Kenites, the sons of Hobab, Moses' father-in-law, and pitched his tent beside the oak tree of Zenanim, which was near Kadesh. So here again we see the Israelites again fall into sin, turn away from the Lord, and do what was evil in his sight. And so the Lord again delivers them into an enemy's hand, and they are oppressed for 20 years. And this new king is highlighted with having 900 iron chariots, which chariots at that time were a very powerful weapon that could easily destroy an enemy force of only like foot soldiers. And so the people cry out to the Lord, and the Lord raises up a woman, Deborah, to be the next judge for the people. And she summons Barak to her and kind of lays it on him for being unfaithful and saying, "Hasn't the Lord already told you to do something and you're not doing it?" And so she maybe a little bit guilt trips him into going to fight against King Jabin, his army, which was led by Sisera. But we see how he is very reluctant to go, and he says he will not go unless Deborah comes along, which, right, what's one woman gonna do for them? Like, that's not gonna help them win the battle, but I think he's taking her along, like, insurance that the Lord will act out what he has already said, that he will defeat the enemy and deliver them into his hand. But even then, he still needs Deborah to come along as like the insurance, because he does not have enough faith.
Yeah, and throughout this story, the author of Judges kind of paints Barak as this pretty faithless guy. But if you look over in the New Testament at Hebrews 11, this is the Hall of Faith, and there are many great biblical figures in here, like Noah, Abraham, Moses, David, and here we find a mention of Barak, actually. Hebrews 11:32 says, "And what more shall I say? For time would fail to tell of me of Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, of David and Samuel, and the prophets, who through faith conquered kingdoms, enforced justice, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quench the power of fire, escape the edge of the sword, were made strong out of weakness, became mighty in war, put foreign armies to flight." And so clearly God uses flawed men and women to accomplish his purposes and to make them great models of faith for us to live by.
Yep, and I mean, it's easy to look at Barak and be like, oh, the Lord said that he was going to defeat the enemies. Why not just go out and attack them and God will do what he says? But I mean, what, God tells us what the future is going to be and how to be faithful to him. And we still are like, what? No, I don't want to do that. I want to go my own way. And we're not always faithful like that. And we're probably even worse than Barak most of the time.
And I think maybe the reason that Barak is in the Hall of Faith in Hebrews 11 is because even though he had his doubts and he had to take Deborah along with him, like, he still followed God's orders and went out to try and defeat the enemy. And even though they had 900 chariots, and so that, I think that shows at least some faith in God, however small it might be. And I think that's a great point for us today to think about, that we should and can still have faith in God, even though we don't understand completely and fully what he's asking of us.
And that reminds me that, like, God has already done all the work in order to defeat this enemy and free the Israelites, and all that needed to be done is trust in him and in what he will do, because it's not by Barak's own strength, Deborah's own strength, our own strength that we are able to free ourselves or anyone from our bondage, but we have that faith that Jesus accomplishes that.
That God will be the one who releases us from our bondage.
Correct. I guess I'll just finish the chapter and then we can talk more. Verse 12. It was reported to Sisera that Barak, son of Abinoam, had gone up Mount Tabor. Sisera summoned all his 900 iron chariots and all the troops who were with him from Harosheth of the nations to the Wadi Kishon. Then Deborah said to Barak, "Go, this is the day the Lord has handed Sisera over to you. Hasn't the Lord gone before you?" So Barak came down from Mount Tabor with 10,000 men following him. The Lord threw Sisera, all of his charioteers, and all his army into a panic before Barak's assault. Sisera left his chariot and fled on foot. Barak pursued the chariots and the army as far as Harosheth of the nations, and the whole army of Sisera fell by sword. Not a single man was left. Meanwhile, Sisera had fled on foot to the tent of Jael, the wife of Heber, the Kenite, because there was a peace between King Jabin of Hazar and the family of Heber, the Kenite. Jael went out to greet Sisera and said to him, "Come in, my lord, come in with me, don't be afraid." So he went into her tent, and she covered him with a blanket. He said to her, "Please give me a little water to drink, for I'm thirsty." She opened a container of milk, gave him a drink, and covered him again. Then he said to her, "Stand at the entrance to the tent. If a man comes and asks you, 'Is there a man here?' say no." While he was sleeping from exhaustion, Heber's wife Jael took a tent peg, grabbed a hammer, and went silently to Sisera. She hammered the peg into his temple and drove it into the ground, and he died. When Barak arrived in pursuit of Sisera, Jael went out to greet him and said to him, "Come, and I will show you the man you are looking for." So he went in with her, and there was Sisera lying dead with a tent peg through his temple. That day, God subdued King Jabin of Canaan before the Israelites. The power of the Israelites continued to increase against King Jabin of Canaan until they destroyed him. So the Lord conquers Sisera and his army. And actually, I thought this was really cool that it doesn't say it in chapter 4, but later in chapter 5, in Deborah's song, she says that the river Kishon swept them away. And so I think that, like, the chariots, which was the sign of strength that Sisera and the Canaanites had, the Lord turns it into a weakness for that nation and uses it to destroy them.
Yeah, I mean, it may not have been a literal flooding of the river Kishon, but regardless, it stands as a metaphor for God's power in rescuing his people Like, he utterly annihilates his enemies and wipes out those who stand against him. And I think that's so awesome that that's the God that we worship. That he can make rivers flood and destroy entire armies.
Yep. And so the Lord, in verse 7, it says, "Then I will lure Sisera, commander of Jabin's army, his chariots and his infantry, at the Wadi Kishon to fight against you, and I will hand them over to you." And so in verse 13, Sisera went to, arrived at the Wadi Kishon, and Deborah's like, "Go, this is where God told you he would put them, and he will hand them over to you. Go, attack." And Barak does do it. So the Lord hands them over to him, and they win the battle. But Sisera flees to the wife of Heber, the Kenite, which the Kenites, from what I gather, are kind of like, they're kind of loyal to Canaan, and they're kind of loyal to Israel. They don't really pick fights with either of them. So, like, Sisera wasn't expecting to meet an enemy in a Kenite. And so he goes into the tent. He asks for water, and Jael gives him milk, which probably symbolizes, like, a more of a welcome. And so then Sisera is off guard. He falls asleep, and Jael kills him pretty gruesomely. And just like that, the whole Canaan army is wiped out.
And again, like, you can see God working throughout all of this. Like, the Lord making Sisera bring his chariots down to the river Kishon, where they could be defeated by Barak. And then Sisera running away from the battle into Jael's tent, where he's vulnerable to her, and she just kills him. So I think you can clearly see God's providence working for the Israelites in this story. And again, I think it's just awesome that we have that God on our side and that we are able to serve him with our lives.
For sure. And we will never be able to alter God's plan and purpose. But when we are unfaithful to him, we miss out on all of the good things that he provides for us and all the beneficial things that he has in store that change our lives for the better. But this whole chapter, I think, is showing us the weakness of men in Israel at that time, which men were the leaders at that time. And so for, like, a woman to be raised up, it was not prevalent in that time. It shows that, like, the failure of leadership of this nation at this time is tremendous. And they just continue. As soon as the judge, the leader that God raised up, dies, immediately they go back to sin and doing what was right in their own eyes. And as we talked about before, it's just this downward spiral. And I think men or leaders are at the heart of this. And as soon as there's no more leader, then it all just falls apart. And I think in the household or raising a family, they were not doing what they were supposed to be doing, and were being unfaithful to God and their families.
Yeah, and going back to that leader thing, as we continue in Judges, we will continue to see this downward spiral, and we'll eventually see that the leaders themselves start to get corrupted by sin. And as a result of that, they're not nearly as effective in bringing about God's plan for Israel, because they are deep in their own sin, and the nation of Israel kind of follows their sin. And so you can sort of see a little bit of that leader corruption happening here with Barak, but, I mean, he isn't fully down the road yet. Like, he still goes out and does what God commands.
Yep, and one other thing that I wanted to point out was that the people of Israel, as they're in this bondage and suffering, oppressed by these other nations, it seems to me that they just cry out to the Lord to escape suffering and judgment that they deserve for their sins. And as soon as the Lord saves them, then soon after that, they forget and they turn right back to sin. And it seems like they're just using God to escape bad things coming upon them. Instead of once God saves them, then being faithful to him because he is faithful to the Israelites in so many ways. But I feel like there are lots of people today that only turn to God when they're going through this hard problem and they say, God, save me from this. I'm going through this hard thing. When in reality, we should be turning to him always and in every circumstance and not using God as a way to escape punishment or harm or something like that. Because I think going through hard circumstances or trials or can teach us a ton. And that might be what God is trying to do. He's trying to teach us or strengthen us. And we just want to get out of this pain and make it an easy life again. So we call out to him to save us from that. And then as soon as we are, we turn back to being our own gods and living in the way we want to.
Yeah, God's forgiveness doesn't mean he negates the consequences of our sin. Like, oftentimes he will keep the consequences of the sin in our lives so that they can teach us to basically do better next time in following his laws. And so that's like one of God's ways of correction is through these consequences of sin and these trials that your sin kind of brought upon you, but that God still uses for his purposes and his glory in sanctifying you and making you free from sin. And we can see that clearly throughout the book of Judges. God basically gives the Israelites over to their sin so that they will learn to be more faithful to him and to test them. And to be honest, they don't really pass the test. But yeah, that's one of the ways that God uses to correct and rebuke and guide his people on the straight and narrow path.
Mm-hmm. And we can choose to be faithful to a God that is remarkably faithful to us. And we can choose to trust in him and do what he says in order to receive all that God has in store for us and all the amazing things that he will do in our lives. Or we can be unfaithful and receive chastisement and tribulation for being disobedient and wanting to follow our own way instead of following in the way that God has already laid for us.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Brothers in Christ, and I hope it blessed you and helped you along in your personal walk with God, and we'll see you next time.